Scotty, come on, let me out.
Scotty, come on, let me out. Scotty, come on, it's been like 3 months. You gonna open the damn door or what? Come on, man, let me out. Look, I understand you don't want to do the podcast anymore, but just let me out, okay? Come on, don't keep me here forever. Hello?
Oh, I guess this is the new year and I'm supposed to be nice this year. Yes, you can come out.
Oh, God, finally, some fresh air. Scotty, you know, I thought I was receiving abuse way, way back when you invited me to East Bollockshire to make a training video and you locked me in the closet and forced me to do the vacuuming before I was able to escape. I thought that kind of you had learned your lessons after the restraining order had been placed by you by the East Bollockshire constable, but apparently not.
Well, we dealt with him, and that's why we could lock you back in a room.
It's part of the rightward shift.
Yeah,
in governments around the world and the new cruelty.
Yeah. All right. It's now perfectly acceptable to treat San Franciscans in that way. When your current president deports you over here, we'll put you back in that closet and give you some hoovering to do.
You are the soul of kindness, Scott.
I am. I will always take in a waif and stray refugee such as yourself. Happy New Year, John.
Happy New Year to you, and thank you for speaking to the microphone so I can hear you.
Well, yeah, sometimes I'm going to learn one of these techniques. I mean, it's been, 18 years since we did the first one of these, or I did the first one of these, so maybe I'll learn where our microphone is at some point. So it's been a while. I think it was late October when we last spoke. I think our last words were, we're not sure what's going to happen next because Sam's gone away, so we're not quite sure how we're going to edit, but apparently we couldn't be even fucked to record either, so... we haven't had to solve the editing problem because there's been nothing to edit. We've been dealing it very well. So the reality is we're talking right now, and if anyone is hearing this, it means that somehow we solved the editing problem, and there we are. So what have you been up to in the, what's it been? Just 2.5 months since we last spoke.
Well, I guess many things. I suppose, like, I feel like I've come out the other side of my Swift UI tunnel, really to build something, that I'm proud of. Hopefully, it will one day see the light of day because it's an exploration right now. But there has been a big effort underway to modularize our code base, which is great because it makes it a lot easier to do experimentation, to mix and match pieces across multiple applications. And it's general good hygiene. It's something that you end up doing, when your engineering team matures. And especially when the code base matures, and it takes a while to do it, but you get lots of benefits of it. And my role in it is to kind of, since I do experimentation work, I always tell people that my ability to do experimentation work is dependent upon the foundational work that gets done for reusable components and easy architectures to manipulate. And I always say that today's experiments are tomorrow's foundation work, because if you do something new and it's successful, then you roll that in, and that thing could be any number of different things. It could just brand new canvases, brand new capabilities, or just rearrangement of technologies to do things that people hadn't thought of before. So I have been working on an experiment and exploration for a while, and actually it's a follow through for the hackathon that I did, where one of the ideas I really liked, and I said, well, let's pull on it a little bit more. And I had chosen way back when to do it all in Swift UI, and I've spoken about that a lot. But this really is kind of like I've been working on it, and now packaging it up and it can help guide us, so I think, over this year. So I'm proud of it. I can't talk in detail about it because it, as always, involves some things that haven't been released yet. But I can definitely say that I personally have learned a lot, and I think that as a team, we're also learning a lot about kind of how to make things work in a hybrid world between Swift UI and UIKit, because we did not make the decision, nor would it make any sense to say, oh, let's rewrite the entire thing from the ground up in Swift UI. Just that doesn't make any sense. for lots of different reasons, but before I go on a long diatribe, I will take a pause to be able to ask, does anybody care about what I'm saying?
John, of course people care about what you're saying. People have been sat with bated breath for however many months waiting to work out what it is, you know, they're missing, that, you know, what it is that you're working on that you can't tell them about. I mean, how their life's supposed to be fulfilled. So I think, John, we've just got to assume that our loyal listener is very, very keen to know what is
okay.
What is going on in your life and the little that you can tell us and the technical fantasies that come out of that position.
All right, there we go. All right, well, with that introduction, I will keep going. So, I mean, I could think of lots of different things, but the first thing I would say is that, you know, what I was working on is dealing with scrolling lists that could be horizontal, it could be vertical, and that may need to be synchronized. And since we do video, it involves a video player. And so, you know, I said that I'm doing it all in Swift UI with you know, with some obvious kind of exceptions, because we're not using Swift UI to do the navigation or the presentation of the sheets, you know, because we are fundamentally a UI kit app. And I came to realize kind of like the standard UI kit way of doing things of nested parent and child view controllers is a pattern that's been used for a long time. And you get lifecycle events for that, because a lot of times you need to do is, like, you know, when view will appear, or view did load, or view will disappear, all those, you know, navigation events, which, you know, govern a lot of what happens, especially in a complex nested, you know, view hierarchy and view controller hierarchy. And in the world of Swift UI, the bridge between Swift UI and UIKit is the UI hosting view controller, which basically allows you to take a Swift UI view and kind of host it in UI view controller, and that UI view controller can be presented in any kind of, you know, way that you would for UIKit based, you know, window and view hierarchy, with one exception, in that, you know, you don't typically, I mean, you can, but if you have lots of different nested hosting view controllers, you don't necessarily add them all as a child view controller. And in some cases, you can also use, you know, UI view representable to be able to take a UI kit view and turn it into something that can be put in a Swift UI view hierarchy. And I definitely did that for our video player, because the video player is complicated. There's a lot of stuff behind it, and you know. And so I kind of ran into a problem where you know, you basically have to deal with things where if you've got multiple video players on screen, there's lots of different things you have to do. You don't want to have them all playing at one time, for obvious reasons, not the least of which is just resources, like, you know. But the other thing too is just, you want to avoid a cacophony. So as you're scrolling, you need to kind of figure out, well, which video player should be playing, and how do you preload the next one, and how do you keep one in cache, so if you go back and scrolling, that it's there, and so forth. So it's fairly complicated stuff under any circumstances, and doing it in Swift UI, there are many advantages of it, because all the logic can live very nicely in a view model, and you can have different presentations of the same thing because the logic is mostly the same. And all that's kind of really good, but a lot of it has to do, that a lot of the things that I discovered had to find workarounds for is how do you replace some of the lifecycle events? Because, like, if you present something modally on top of it, say that you want to share something, so you present a modal share sheet and the view controller behind it, its view will disappear, you know, ultimately will get called for, you know, because technically it has, even though it's visible on the screen, but effectively you've got something modal on top of it. And if you've got video playing back, you want to pause it, for example. And so that's where some of the things, you know, got a little bit tricky, because if you have a UI kit view that is used in a Swift UI view hierarchy using UI view representable, it's not added as a child view controller, so it wouldn't get those events. And if you've got video playing back on there, that there you have the issue. So you kind of have to come up with your own lifecycle events. So that's an example. I mean, it's kind of a very kind of specific detail, but these are the things that you come across. The other thing I think that was a bit of a struggle was dealing with scrolling, because the same thing, you've got a scrolling list and you want to do it efficiently as possible. You need to know things like, where am I? Kind of like, if you have, you know, you can have paging scroll views, or you can have scroll views where you kind of have you know, where you can have items that would cross a boundary, you know, start to become invisible, and you have to decide which one is the one that's a focus and which one should therefore have video playback, as an example. So those types of things, you know, that's very, very well understood with the UI scroll view. But again, in the world of Swift UI, you have a scroll view, and only with iOS 17 did you start to get some of the APIs that existed in UIKit. Were they exposed or rewritten? I don't know how, you know, whether it's, I mean, I think it's really a case of exposed, because still Swift UI is largely rendered by UIKit. And so that's always been the classic rub, that things go really well, they go easily. You're saying, my gosh, this is so productive, I love this, until you hit a wall. And I've talked about that before. But I think in the end, I've come away with something that I am proud of, because it can be injected in the app, you know, from anywhere. It can be self-contained, and it seems to be every bit as performant as the Swift as the UIKit version, and just seems to work nicely. So I'm proud of it, and it provides a nice kind of basis, as I said, kind of this work which is new, is something that it can be a good kind of, you know, test case for modularization, where you have brand new stuff that needs to interact with kind of the old way of doing things, but still take advantage of newer APIs. So anyway, that's in a nutshell what I've been up to. Scotty, tell me what you've been up to.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about yours first, and then we'll come back to it.
Sure.
Yeah, I find it interesting. Firstly, it's what you're saying is, yeah, it's sort of relate to, I think, anytime you're using Swift UI in a hosting view, there are behavioral differences from, you know, but let's say both parties, be it Swift UI or UIKit, I know technically they don't behave differently to what they would normally do, but certain things do and don't happen. And so, yeah, that is a complication. And I think it's the world where you can work in pure Swift UI or pure UIKit is probably a simpler world, but equally, we're a long way off of that, partly because we have legacy code bases. And secondly, you know, the reality is Swift UI doesn't do everything UIKit does yet, even. So, however, you know, maybe we're reaching the tipping point, particularly for apps that have been started in the last few years, where, you know, it's a Swift UI app that introduces UIKit as opposed to the other way around. And I have not had the pleasure or privilege of working on an app that goes on that basis to know if they struggle with the same problems that you've just been describing going the other way around, although you're using Swift UI in UIKit that uses UIKit in Swift UI. So, you know, you're just basically trying to fuck up as much as you can, basically, and push it to its limits. But it just made me think we seem to have, for the last 10 years now, maybe coming up to 11 since the introduction to Swift, been living in this sort of like half and half world. I mean, it started off by we were trying to live in a Swift stroke Objective-C world, where we are having to make those two work together. And the fact that Apple got them to work together at all is still impressive. And I'm still in that position. I still mix Swift and Objective-C code every day in there. But now we're mixing UIKit with Swift UI. And there is just, I guess, the hope that at least one of these, if not two of these, items pass into the, you know, the long and distance and forgotten past before we have to maybe introduce a third. Maybe have you hosting views launched from Objective-C that contains Swift UI code with, you know, the latest whatever the thing that we have to inject into Swift UI for compatibility. Just sounds to me like maybe a step too far. in one technology too many. But I think I find it reasonably interesting that when we were in the Swift Objective-C world, which I know is a language and framework, so it's maybe a slightly different in compiler interaction, it felt that there was far more griping about it going on than maybe, I know people gripe about Swift UI has limitations in certain places, and there's just nothing you can do. If Swift UI doesn't support something yet, it doesn't support something yet. I mean, you could write your own views, I guess, to make things work, but in there. But it does seem that on the whole, the sort of mixing with UIKit does just sort of work for most things. But then, because we get used to it just working, as you say, when there are then certain things, like certain messages don't come because things aren't in the message hierarchy, you know, they can be, let's just say, a little bit of a time sink. And yeah. I know I've been there before of, you know, realizing something wasn't quite laying out quite the way I expected to because it was in a hosting view. And if it wasn't in a hosting view, so when I was just looking at the same view in a preview and everything worked fine, but as soon as it went into a hosting view and it turned out to be, you know, this is on Mac, it turned out to be, you know, one of the option settings on the window that the hosting view was in was making a difference to the way SwiftUI was rendering. Who knew?
Right.
There we are. Anyway.
I have one last grumpy old man thing to say, and then I will shut up on this topic. And that is, there is a fundamental way between the way UIKit and SwiftUI works, and that, you know, with SwiftUI, you can reach in and grab references to any view in your hierarchy and make it do things. I mean, it's a way that can be done, right? You can press a button, and then a button can have a function that will then go find a particular view and do something, hide it, whatever. And of course, in SwiftUI, you don't do that. Everything is bound to a state, you know, a published object or a state object. So you change the state in the model, and somewhere behind the scenes in Apple world, they will basically go take notice of those things and change your layout. So that's all great and wonderful. Then when it comes time to passing messages, that's where things become a little bit tricky because, for instance, let's say that you want to tear down a bunch of stuff and you don't have those lifecycle events to happen. Or you're starting a drag session in a collection view and you want something else to take notice of it. And in those particular cases, I don't know why it is, but when I first started out and I first learned about notifications, I thought, oh, this is great. This is an easy way to send messages without having anything bad bound into it. And then over time, I thought, oh, that's not very sophisticated because it just sends them out into the ether. And yes, you can have an object that's referred to, and you can have a user info to help kind of, you know, decide which object should take notice of it. And then when I got to trying to figure out how to pass a message through this hierarchy to be able to do something, at first I was like, okay, there's got to be a way, you know, using an environment object and passing things along that way. But then I thought, it's like, no, I just post a notification. And anybody can listen to a notification, and especially if it's kind of like for a terminal lifecycle event saying, time to tear everything down, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's, you know, sometimes the old ways of doing things are just a simple way of doing it still indoors. And I thought about that, and I think that, you know, there are some classes and some capabilities that have been around for a good long time, and they're still useful. Anyway, I will conclude with that, and now we can listen to you, Scotty, for you to open up your storybook and tell us of your adventures.
Well, John, my life has been reasonably dull, but I'm sort of productive. Client work carries on as always, which is tinkering away at stuff, which I can't really talk about, but to be honest, is not really anything that will be that interesting to people anyway. It's just work. I've been, and on the Moneywell point of view, we've been pretty busy. We've rewritten, well, not rewritten, we've swapped out virtually every view in the Moneywell iOS app from Zibs. It was so old, it wasn't even, brain has gone blank. What came after Zibs? Storyboards, thank you. There we are. From Zibs to SwiftUI. And that was a reasonably successful transition. We just began with a virtually a like for like. We didn't look to make any improvements. We didn't look to make any, you know, that many changes. We just swapped out, looked to swap out Zibs for SwiftUI and give ourselves a better position to work from, because it was Zibs with Objective-C before in there. And so now we're able to, although, you know, that was a bunch of work that at the end of it, didn't look like we'd done any work at all. you might say it does put us in a better position to be making UI changes going forward than we were before. So that was more of a preparing for the future. And on the Mac side, we've been just building up. We're building up for a reasonably big release. So with some changes that's taken a lot longer than we were hoping. We were hoping to have it out before the end of last year. It's probably still going to be at least a month away here now to do with, and I've spoken about this before, so I won't go into it again, about redeveloping the whole way you plan your budget and develop your budget within Moneywell, which again is the core, but that's all that's been redone in Swift and Swift UI because it was in Objective-C and SIBs beforehand. And to be honest, had a lot of bugs in it. And generally looking to overall simplify the app for new users without pissing off old users, if that makes sense. An example might be Moneywell traditionally supports multiple currencies. And the reality is, if you are doing, you know, banking or accounting, then supporting multiple currencies has, you know, quite a lot of value. But the truth is, for budgeting, multiple currency doesn't work. You can't really budget in multiple currencies. You should be budgeting in your currency. And then when you have an expense, and as I've said this 100 times before, when you put an expenses into Moneywell, it's really just so you can progress against budget. That's the main thing, but monitoring and driving your budget. So then, and multiple currencies were very complicated in Moneywell. They create a lot of complicated code, but we do have users using them. Not many, but some users using them. So a little while ago, for example, we changed Moneywell that going forward, if you create a new budget, it's a single currency. Yeah, we have ways of rehacking it open to be a multiple currency one, but it doesn't even give you the option of multiple currencies now. You pick a currency and you go with it. But yeah, that's quite a lot of going through the app and saying, this is where you would normally be given a currency choice. Let's just, you know, get rid of the drop down. Let's just put in the currency of the that you're currently on, and stuff like that. And then, of course, I have to go back through again and fix all the bugs for the stuff that you didn't necessarily pick up on. So, for example, where someone is using a single currency in their budget, but it's not the currency they're running their Mac in. So that has a few, you know, mainly display glitches where it displays the wrong currency code or something in a report or whatever. So very dull, but just overall simplification. Now, in an ideal world, I'd just be saying, let's just rip out the multi-currency, but we don't want to, we don't want to really at this point drive away those users that are using multiple currency, or especially as a lot of these users have been there a long time. But it does open up the question in the long term, you know, how long do you, when it comes to replacing these parts of the app, like we have done just now with the budget developer screen, you know, we don't want to go through all the stuff again. So transitioning people to a simpler app, is going to be a challenge in how you sell that to people. But equally, we are still very much in the position with Moneywell that it's the customers of the future that are going to decide whether this app is successful or not successful, not the customers of the past, unfortunately. So I guess even though we're like 4 years in now, whatever, we're still maybe trying not to piss off existing users maybe a little bit too much, but I guess that's probably a common tendency in small indie small company developers on the Mac in, you know, historically, because it's which is funny because the Mac was always well known for just pushing on. People would make their Mac app support the latest OS pretty quickly, but it seems that, you know, compared to Windows, not compared to iOS by any means, but compared to Windows, Mac apps deprecated stuff, moved on very quickly. But we maybe seem to have got stuck in a more "we'll support you from 10 years ago" type of thing, which is anyway. That's mainly what I've been up to, and onboarding, which I think I'll talk about another time. But as I've said 1,000 times before, the big issue with our app is not the lack of features or the lack of whatever. It's people getting to start using the app. So lots of UI onboarding work going on which is also why we then say, well, let's make it single currency, then we don't have to do some things. So you're in one screen of the onboarding and you say, if we do this, and then you go off for 3 weeks and do the work to make that supported in the background type of thing.
Well, have you been able to go taunt Sam? Is he still within the greater metropolitan East Ballockshire area? And are you able to kind of go to the cafe or barn where he's working and stick your tongue out at him or anything like that?
Sam, I saw Sam on Christmas Eve, actually. He came round, and there's a few things going on at my house. And he basically, I said, are you enjoying yourself? And he said, yes. And I said, what's the best thing? And he says, I don't have to listen to you two old fuckers waffle on every week.
Did he actually? He probably did say that.
No, he didn't say that at all. And now he doesn't have to listen to us old fuckers waffle on every week. He won't even know that I said that about him. So there we go.
Of course.
Well, I will send him that outtake. That cutting from it once someone edits it. So somewhere around mid-May.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's good. Well, a great moment.
We haven't recorded for 2 months, but we probably at some point should review our schedule. And the reality is I'm going to be editing this now, so who knows when it's going to come out. We'll see. Just for reference, folks, we're recording this on Wednesday, the 8th of Jan.
Don't say the year. Don't say the year. Don't say the year.
Let's see when it hits the feeds.
Okay. Well, Scotty, maybe we should be merciful then. And bring it down for a rest so that the first, so first of all, there's less to edit and that the first fractional listener only has a little bit of punishment this year.
That is true. Okay. Let's make a New Year's resolution to not only record, but keep it concise and not waffle on too much. Oops, failed. Okay. John, if people want to get hold of you and tell you what a UI hero you are for mixing all these technologies and understanding how they work and getting things to still look cool and slick, where should they do it?
Well, Scotty, you can find me on the internet in a variety of places, some of which I still look at. Like Threads, where you can find me as John Fox, or on Mastodon, where you can find me as Jembe at mastodon.social, and I'm also on Blue Sky, which I kind of like a little bit, also as Jembe. One of those places you can find my attention. And Scotty, if people want to come by and listen patiently for 2.5 milliseconds, or give you the killer idea to ditch multiple currency in favor of everything being done in Dogecoin, how might they do that?
Yeah, well, I've sort of dropped off social media from a professional point of view almost completely in the last few months, and I'm trying to decide whether I want to go back on or not. So there are benefits to it, but equally not so social. I mean, I use social media for some personal reasons. I mainly post photographs of my breakfast and my dinner so that next week I can be reminded what I had for breakfast and dinner. I'm viewing it that when I'm old, I'll remember what to cook. That's the main thing. But people don't want to necessarily see that. So I am still on Mastodon as MacDevNet, MacDevNet at mastodon.social. If people start talking to me, that might encourage me to come back on. And to be more active, but right now I don't. But please do reach out to me. Cause look at me as a rescue case of someone who needs to be drawn back into the fold, and not become a recluse living in a tent in the corner of social media world. So yeah, Scotty at mastodon.social. Well, John, it's almost like we'd not ever spoken. No, we'd never taken a break. I don't know. It was about as slick as normal is all I'm going to say.
Absolutely. All right.
So it's good. But here we are. We are back for the new year. This is episode 395. So, we are steadily steaming towards that episode 400. Whoever has been on duty today for listening, hopefully this appeared in your feeds. I don't know how aggressive modern podcast readers are for dropping feeds when nothing has been in them for a while. So maybe we've gone down from our one listener to no listeners. I guess only time will tell. But if anybody does hear this, if this is in the out there anywhere, thank you for listening. And until next time.
You take care.